Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. So House Speaker Mike Johnson took to the floor yesterday to offer an extended speech on border security. Important in this time because you need a House Republican response to the pressure coming from Beltway media, Senate Republicans who are intent on surrendering, not to mention the White House. You come to the table, bipartisan compromise, negotiate in good faith, all of these things. Well, Johnson sort of reframed where we're at and provided some more detail to one of the talking points you've heard from House Republicans for the better part of the last couple of weeks, which is on the topic of the 64 specific actions Biden took per his executive power to weaken border security, to reverse a number of the policies that were advanced, again, by executive authority under President Trump. And therefore, of course, the obvious point is, well, he still retains that executive power to reverse his reversals in the direction of border security. So just, you know, again, framing where we're at as these numbers are bandied about and where we have been at under the big guy, Mr. 10%, President Biden.
Here's a short list. From Texas to New York, waves of illegal immigrants are now overwhelming our communities. Just since the time I was elected speaker, less than 100 days ago, more than 700,000 illegals have been welcomed into our country illegally by the Biden administration. American school children have been forced into virtual schools. Why? So migrants can sleep in their school buildings. Korean War veterans of the U.S. have been booted from nursing homes that were sold to house migrants. Our streets are being flooded with fentanyl. Hundreds of thousands of children and adults are being poisoned and losing their lives. Vulnerable children and women are being exploited and trafficked by cartels, and that's happening even within our borders. The fallout goes on and on and on. And I am here this morning to beg of my colleagues to help us force the administration to take action. We have to stop this now and put Americans and Americans' border security first.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro. Answer line 64636. Type in DA, then a quick comment.
One of the important points that is made and needs to be made repeatedly, where he was talking about the high-profile incident in New York at that high school where students from the neighborhood are displaced for migrants, Korean War veterans, as he's describing it, being displaced. So the point here is not just sort of generically we have this problem and we're going to talk 700,000 and 1.8 million gotaways and all these numbers being bandied about, but the number one, make it tangible, make it human costs, fentanyl overdoses and the sex trafficking and so forth. But also understand that your government is prioritizing people from foreign lands who've entered this country facilitated by your government illegally. They're prioritizing those individuals over you, the taxpaying American citizen. It's just a simple sort of fundamental fairness point, but it needs to be repeated so that it really, I think, resonates and sticks with people, is my sense of it. Now, that doesn't absolve House Republicans of doing more than just detailing what has transpired over the last 3 years, or as you heard from Speaker Johnson, just since he's taken the speakership. But the messaging and the making of the argument, that is part of the job of the congressional Republican leadership. And since you're not going to get it from the Senate, I mean, not from Senate leadership, you'll get it from individual Republican senators. It's important that the House fill that gap. It's also important that the House fly in formation with, the Republican presidential nominee de facto. That would be one former president, Donald Trump, wouldn't it? So Johnson continued, again, so now pulling back. I mean, again, some of what he described there, just since he took the speakership.
Right. Well, one thing that he missed is what's going on in Denver. And it's so bad that even NBC Nightly News covered the story regardless. I mean, they did do it on a Friday, but it was last Friday. They interviewed the principal of a school, Dan, who he's overwhelmed. And he normally gets 5 to 10 new students a year. He's getting 5 to 10 new students a week. And guess what's happening? The American children who go to that school are being sent to other schools to make space for illegals. And that is the biggest bunch of bull jive. Everybody should know about that story.
Okay, well, that's another example, like the New York story, that provides some form to what is being described in terms of non-citizens in this country illegally, mainly facilitated by this administration. I mean, I see all this stop the invasion. This is an invasion. It's not an invasion. It's an importation.
Right. We're letting them in. They're not invading. If we're saying, come on in, here's a hole in the fence. Here's where you go.
Right. So I mean, if it's an invasion, think about it this way. So who's leading the invasion? I mean, you could say that, I don't know, the argument about some of these countries sending some of their worst and the cartels and the international gangs, the MS-13 types and so forth. But I mean, but who's really breaking through the southern border? Who's aiding all of these individuals in terms of breaking into the country? It's not a foreign power. It's the American government. So is the American government is invading America?
Well, all I know is Americans are suffering because of this, and children who have gone to the same school for 9 years are being shipped to other schools. That's not fair for the moms. It's not fair for the kids, and it's not fair for Americans as a whole. Because if it happens there, it's going to happen you know where.
Yeah. Okay. So it's important to understand what's happening writ large. That's why I bristle at this invasion talk. You're misidentifying the responsible party.
Well, a lot of people are misidentifying. Like Governor DeSantis, he had a press conference yesterday with a big orange sign, stop the invasion.
That's why I'm addressing it. Speaker Johnson talking about the last 3 years, just to make sure everybody's updated.
Since President Biden and Alejandro Mayorkas assumed office, there have been more than 7 million encounters with illegal aliens just at our southern border alone. 35 of our 50 states, including my home state of Louisiana, don't have a population that large. Yet that's how many people have been apprehended in just the past 3 years. Among those who've been apprehended on the southern border, but between ports of entry, more than 300 individuals who are on our terror watch list. Terrorist watch list. The frightening question is, if so many terrorists were caught attempting to cross our borders, how many have entered undetected? We suspect it is a much higher number. And we know that there are at least 1.8 million gotaways that we know have escaped CBP. Who knows what dangerous plans those gotaways are making and what foreign adversaries they may be speaking with.
Or what crimes they may have committed. Yesterday, I mean, again, just to put not too fine a point on it. Yesterday, legislation, again, we talked about legislation, and it's good what House Republicans are doing, essentially, is calling the bluff of the open borders crowd as well as the pro-Hamas crowd. So the other day it was not allowing anybody who collaborated with Hamas and the October 7th terrorist attack in this country. And you outed two Democrats, Rashida Tlaib and Cori Bush, as so pro Hamas that they want to allow terrorists to emigrate to this country. They certainly don't want to prohibit it. Yesterday it was DUIs. expelling migrants who've been convicted of driving under the influence. And you could just go down the whole list of class X felonies, since we know we have so many people in this country illegally who have been convicted of serious crimes in the United States.
Well, and people
Here's
should
a leader.
Know. Oh, well, people should know that our congresswoman in Elk Grove Village and other surrounding communities, Delia Ramirez, she voted present on that, whether or not to deny immigration to Hamas terrorists.
Yeah, well, right. Well, that's part of our illustrious congressional delegation. On this matter of migrant DUIs and expelling them, you know, deporting them, Pramila Jayapal, she is the band manager of the Socialist Spice Girls. Here's what she said on the House floor yesterday.
Once again, the majority is wasting our time by putting forward a piece of legislation that has zero chance of becoming law and that is extraordinarily broad. No one condones driving under the influence. We should do everything we can to prevent people from getting behind the wheel while intoxicated. But this bill, designed to scapegoat and denigrate immigrants, will not solve the serious problem of DUIs.
No, the problem of DUIs is serious, but the problem of people in this country illegally exacerbating the problem of DUIs is serious, too. And it's also a point they're making about how committed to open borders they are, how uninterested they are, this political class in D.C., in the safety of American citizens, the interests of American citizens, the existence of something called an American citizen. Candace in Mount Pleasant, Wisconsin.
Hi. Years ago, I started looking this up for some reason. The phrase was the most violent places on earth. And people would think it was like a Muslim country. Wrong. Like 6 to 8 nations were in South America. So this is like no surprise to me that communists are importing communists. This is the army that and the police force that Obama said he always wanted. And the second thing is, these people are used to extreme violence, and they're emptying out these jails in places that you wouldn't even ever go to. I mean, and they're coming up here, you know? So what does that tell you? It tells me that the federal dollar is going to go kaput, and they want to get rid of as many people because we are a liability. You have to understand that they have financial obligations to us. And I'm sorry, but what's coming is very ugly and very scary.
Thanks for the call, Candace. David Lansing.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Dan, you said this is an importation, not an invasion.
Yeah.
I would disagree with you. The Biden administration and many prominent Democrats have been bought off by China. There are spies. We know that a couple of politicians in California have been infiltrated by spies for a long time. These are agents of China. This is an invasion. These politicians, the Bidens, they've been paid off to let these people in. They are the enemy. The Bidens, these people are not on our side. And so this is an invasion. This is a military invasion by China.
And yeah. Well, you thanks for the call, Dave. Yeah, I get the point. But, you know, with all due respect, you know, Eric Swalwell falling prey to a honeypot scheme doesn't constitute a Chinese military invasion. I'm sorry. I understand these countries that are averse to our interests, and I understand how compromised the Biden hillbilly crime family is. But you have to connect the dots a little bit better to convince me that it is not purposeful on behalf of the American political class led by the movement Marxists to reshape America and by that, I mean the demographics of America, ideological mainly, in order to ensconce themselves in power for as far as the eye can see. I think that's the bigger play, as we talked about the other day when it came to answering the question, you know, why would you continue to do something that is costing you so much politically? Well, there has to be some political payoff because that's how these politicians think. What is the political payoff? How does this enhance my power, keep me in power?
And to it's win 2024.
It's on the voting side, and there's specifics. There's specific opportunities that are present, and I think this is where they're going to try to exploit those opportunities and try to normalize this too, just as we have Evanston moving to the timing of this very interesting moving to allow non-citizens to vote in local elections. There's something afoot here. It's being done internally. You can call it a fifth column action. You can say there are foreign saboteurs involved, but it is being led here by the people that we have put into office.
It's news, opinion, insight. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer.
Business owners, now's the time for your business to make the move to a locally owned business bank. Hi, Mike Gallagher here to let you know that you don't have to look far. Signature Bank was founded in Chicago with a simple mission to help companies like yours grow, succeed, and thrive. Their decisions are made locally by a terrific team that knows your name, cares about your business, and invests in your success. That's why Signature Bank is my bank. I'm a customer. As business owners, they knew that local family-owned businesses were not getting the help they needed or deserved. So I invite you to reach out to my friends at Signature Bank today. Write the number down. Remember this phone number, Signature Bank, 773-467-5630, and learn all about this great bank, 773-467-5630, or visit them online at signaturebank.bank. That's signaturebank.bank. Signature Bank makes commercial banking personal. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
The biggest stories, only the biggest guests, and only the biggest opinions. This is AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy, talking about House Speaker Mike Johnson's speech on the House floor yesterday, outlining in some detail the situation at the border and the different perspectives House Republicans have as compared to some of their Senate colleagues, and certainly as compared to the White House, responding to some of the charges that have been leveled by the Biden White House against House Republicans in an effort to, you know, try to put this back on House Republicans for being obstructionist rather than the Biden administration taking the blame for codifying lawlessness at the border. And he went through a couple specifics. You know, he's got this list of 64 actions Biden has taken to weaken the border, taken by himself. So he didn't need us, and he still doesn't, although we're happy to provide a framework, H.R. 2, for him to use to, you know, paint by numbers. Just a couple examples that Mike Johnson gave during his remarks to put some specifics to this. Among the 64 executive actions Biden has taken to weaken border security, well, how about the wall?
The day he took office, the very first day that he walked into the Oval Office, President Biden revoked Executive Order 9844. You know what that did? It ended construction of the border wall that Congress had already paid for. Everybody's seen the images on TV, the materials out there rotting in the sun and the elements. Why? Because Joe Biden decided unilaterally he didn't want a wall.
The end of Title 42.
In February 2021, the administration stopped applying Title 42 expulsions to children, and incentivized by doing that, incentivized families to send unaccompanied children through Mexico under the watch of who? Cartels and traffickers. Since then, the administration has lost track. They admit to this number, they admit that they've lost track of more than 80,000 unaccompanied children somewhere in the U.S.
Right. It's a reminder of how inhumane the open borders policy is. It's not just with respect to American citizens. It's also with respect to, kids from around the world.
Remember that day in December when they had 12,000 people come in? There were 391 kids that were unaccompanied. And they showed video. It was the Houston station. And one kid just looked scared out of her mind. And I can't even imagine what they went through and what they were, you know, transfer, like what deals were made.
This is the compassionate position to open the borders. and lose track of 85,000 kids who came here unaccompanied because of what you incentivized families to do, or the opportunities you provided cartels and traffickers to exploit, combination of the two, remain in Mexico. And, you know, it's important to just detail these, as Mike Johnson did. It's important to – I've got the receipts right here. I can show you my receipts to prove what I'm saying.
I'll continue. In October 2021, the Biden administration revoked the migrant protection protocols that had been instituted under President Trump. That's the policy that we all know colloquially as Remain in Mexico, right? The Remain in Mexico policy kept asylum seekers in a safe haven third country while they were seeking asylum in the United States. You know why that works so magically well? Because it sent a message around the world that you shouldn't pay your life savings to a cartel to traffic you through Mexico and drop you over the U.S. border, because you're not going to be dropped over the U.S. border. Hey, save your time and treasure in trouble. Don't take that dangerous journey, because the word goes out on social media to countries all around the world, they're not going to let you in.
And if these executive actions didn't generate this lawlessness we have at the border and all the numbers we previously detailed, 1.8 million gotaways, 7 million illegal encounters in the last 3 years. If these policies didn't serve as the proximate cause, then what did? Just global migratory patterns, as John Kirby and others would have you believe. You know, migration is happening everywhere. That's all very interesting. Why, to this extent, at our southern border, and so distinct from just a couple of years ago, the topography of the world and the places that people are coming from has not changed that much. Yes, there are countries that are war-torn, like Ukraine, and that's a separate category, and countries like Afghanistan, where we had allies who served as interpreters with our forces, and we needed to make provisions, although we did a terrible job, for people who put their lives on the line to support the U.S. mission in Afghanistan, and they should be have the promises that we made kept. They have no answer. They have no explanation, because the explanation for why things are the way they are is obvious, and it's being detailed, or was detailed yesterday for the better part of 30 minutes by Mike Johnson. Those are just a few substantive examples.
I really like him. I mean, he's growing on me. Isn't he growing on you?
Well, he's a smart guy. He's very measured. He is substantive. I mean, he lays out the case like a good lawyer will. And the only thing I would say, well, there's two things I'd say about Mike Johnson, what wasn't in the speech.
What?
One is the voting issue that we talked about earlier this week.
Oh,
I've got the Cleta Mitchell memo, then somebody maybe, you know, I don't know, I'll mail it to Mike Johnson or email
it
to
him.
but I mean, right. So you have to start talking about this. The House Republicans, in addition to legislation like, you know, banning Hamas collaborators from entering this country, deporting migrants who've been convicted of DUI and other violent crimes. You have to be talking about the National Voter Registration Act. You have to be talking about what the landscape looks like in terms of opportunities for non-citizens to illegally vote in federal elections. Foreign students. Individuals overseas under federal law, that, you know, federal law that was originally conceived to make it easier for military families to vote while deployed overseas. But as was detailed in Cleta Mitchell's memo, this is the renowned election attorney who put this memo together that should be like a clarion
on
call for Republican action. So overseas, 63% in 2020 of those overseas votes were civilian. And I mean, if she knows that there are these opportunities to exploit, and they're more easily exploited when you have 1.8 million gotaways, well, guess then the NGOs the left-wing NGOs who facilitate the illegal entry and who have voter registration programs know. And what do we know, as she asked in that memo? About Department of Homeland Security, Right. The Biden administration has directed Department of Homeland Security to make contact with everyone in this country that's encountered. So 7 million illegal encounters. So, I mean, is there any concern about subterranean voter registration programs? I mean, these are just I don't know, but I know what Cleta Mitchell laid out very soberly. And if you read the memo and listen to our distillation of it, then you see, I mean, it's
very concerned.
Well, the opportunities for illegal voting are manifest.
Right. Well, it makes me think that that's why they've been letting thousands of people in for the last 3 years. I mean, thousands a day for the last 3 years to rig this election or not.
Well,
just guarantee a win.
Well, it makes me think that, too. And so that this is why I say, well, so why we need Speaker Johnson to start talking about what the National Voter Registration Act provides and doesn't provide, what reforms are needed to that. And that needs to be advanced. This needs to be part of the conversation. The other piece, of course, is that as much saber rattling as he did and as much detail as he provided and separation from Senate Republicans trying to negotiate a surrender. Well, if it's as serious as you say, 300 known or suspected terrorists and so on and so on, and all of the other details that have been provided, then why aren't you shutting it down? Why aren't you closing the wallet and saying nothing shall pass, no spending will be approved until and unless?
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. You can also reach us on our text line, which is up and running this morning, 64636. Type in DA, then a quick comment.
Because here's what's going on in the country. In places like Massachusetts, which is, there's competition, leading the way to try to find long-term housing solutions for people in this country illegally, people in this country legally but illegally, if you know what I mean, because of the elimination of Remain in Mexico. Some have an asylum, filed an asylum application and have paperwork that indicates court date, but they shouldn't be in this country. So legally, illegally is sort of my hybrid there. But anyway, the plan is, you're staying in Massachusetts, and Governor Laura Healey there, and normally I wouldn't question Laura Healey because she's a lesbian and we know they're magical people in politics. Laura Healey, on her commitment to find long-term housing for migrants that have made their way to Massachusetts.
Emotional, guys, okay? Because I'm committed to this. Little kids need to be able to breathe clean air. They need to be able to access swimming pools. They need to have lifeguards there who are going to teach them how to swim. And they need to have activities. I don't know what we're going to do for a couple, 3 months. I'll call universities. I'll call other places.
The governor went on to say she is also looking at other locations, but has not said exactly where.
You know, she's only talking about people in this country illegally. She's talking about migrants. She's not talking about kids that are residents of Boston or Cambridge, Massachusetts. She's just talking about those new arrivals, as they are wont to say. She turned turned one recreational center in a predominantly black neighborhood into a facility to house illegal immigrants. That did not sit well with the neighborhood, but, you know, like you see in Chicago. Well, the hell with you. Who are you? You're just a American citizen who resides in Chicago and pays taxes. Who are you?
Not
we have other priorities.
Not a winning message that she had there, and shame on her. She knows she's hurting the Americans, the Bostonians, and she's not doing anything more about it and crying like a baby. You're the governor of the gosh darn state. You can say no. And what they're trying to do, Dan, is take the people, the illegals who are in Logan Airport, and move them there. And she's so naive to think it's just going to be a few months. Bull jive. Once she turns that over to them, they're not getting it back. We're never getting the Broadway Armory back, ever.
Yeah. Yeah,
there's seven park districts we're not getting back. She's not going to get that back.
You're missing the point. You may or may not get it back. At some point, you'll probably get it back. You're missing the point. It's not about your Park District building, and it's not about this rec center in Boston. It's about permanent residency for people in this country illegally. That's what this is about. One form or the other. We'll commandeer government buildings for as long as we need. We'll put you at O'Hare Airport or airports around the country, Atlanta. We've seen videos. We'll put you at a rec center in Boston. And then ultimately, you know, we'll try to figure out maybe a housing complex, maybe retrofitting an empty office building like's going on right now in the West Loop. But the play is not the building. The play is permanent location in the United States, regardless of anything, documentation, criminal history, ability to and desire to work. So you're not effectively a ward of the state. All that's out the window. They have no interest. It is about finding a way and pulling at people's heartstrings the way that she did to keep the people who are flowing in here forever. Brian in St. John, Indiana.
What's good, Captain? So I stopped listening to you guys back in April because I can't afford to be getting heated at 5:30 in the morning. But I called the comments about the socialist place girl band manager, and then I heard the governor of Massachusetts say something about the kids deserve swimming pools. Like, are you kidding me, man? Like my
lifeguards too. Yeah.
My kids would like a swimming pool too. You know what I mean? But
you're just an American citizen.
Yeah, give it to the illegals. They need to swim too.
About the band manager. You know, she was talking about it's unnecessary to have these law to try to pass a law that's not going to pass. You and I both know she knows fully that it's just going to put them on the record of not wanting to export an illegal immigrant for having a DUI. So I just found it incredible how she spun that because you and I know why they would do that, and she's just spinning it opposite. So,
right. Thanks for the call, Brian. Well, right. You're leveling up legislation that has no chance of passing. I'm sorry. Is that the standard? Because if it's the standard, then what were you guys doing trying to federalize elections for the first 2 years of this administration when you knew that wasn't going to pass, and all the other things that you've attempted to do that you knew weren't going to pass? Because you're driving a discussion to its ultimate end, and you may not get it this session and you may not get it next session, but you're going to keep at it. And frankly, the left is better when it comes to that sort of stick-to-itiveness than is the right. So don't be disabused. Oh, if you're wasting time. It's symbolic because it's not going to pass. The legislative act, a legislative bill, is a vehicle to drive debate and understanding, to persuade people to a position, to create political pressure on politicians that are susceptible to it. Yeah, so don't listen to Jayapal. I mean, if you know, there's too much competition to designate her as the most disingenuous member of the House, but she's certainly in the conversation. Kip in Stillman Valley.
Yeah, hey, this is something to food for thought. When's a United States citizen going to be considered an occupier like the Israelis are in Israel? How can you run a sanction against four Israelis that we don't really know what happened, but Biden put sanctions on these people, you know, that's in the news.
Sanctions on who? Who are you talking about?
On four Israeli settlers attacking the Palestinians. It's been on the news just recently. So he's did an executive order and Blinken talked about it and that, you know, because they're trying to crack down on Israelis attacking Palestinians. So, I mean, when are we getting not necessarily invaded? I understand where you're coming from. Citizens of the United States are going to be considered an occupier of their own country. Have a great day.
Thanks for the call. Yeah.
Right. It's news, opinion, insight. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer.
Hey, business owners, is your business and money in good hands? Does your bank invest in your success? Hi, Mike Gallagher here, letting you know that when you need a relationship bank, Signature Bank makes commercial banking personal. I love these guys. Not only do they have expansive industry experience, a strong financial track record, but they're also highly capitalized for strategic growth. That's so important. That's why Signature Bank is my bank. They know what it means to grow a business by designing solutions that are right for you and only you. These are real people. They're ready to help. So reach out to my friends at Signature Bank. Make the call today. 773-467-5630. 773-467-5630. Or visit them online at signaturebank.bank. That's signaturebank.bank. Your business could be Signature Bank's next success story. Go online, signaturebank.bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender. Signature Bank.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Well, you'll be impressed. Taking immediate action in the wake of the two shootings over the last week that have occurred outside of CPS high schools. Yesterday, BLM Brandon and Jelly Belly went over to the South Shore Cultural Center and got together with the hangers-on, government, city and state. Oh, and that, of course, includes business leaders and everybody else, because everything runs through the government in Illinois and Chicago. That's why the place is such a catastrophe, because it's so government-centric. So here's the big news. Are you ready for it? Big news on violence for violence prevention. They're going to try to double the amount of money that is spent on violence prevention, from $200 million to $400 million through a public-private partnership, with the goal of reducing the number of shootings and homicides in Chicago by 50% within 5 years. That's another five-year plan. Very Stalin-esque. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 646-36-DA, turnkey.pro text line. Are you wowed?
I don't know where to begin. I'm so excited. How do we celebrate this, Dan? This is big news. This is just more money being thrown after another problem and another five-year plan, blah, blah, blah. Meanwhile, they just come out and say it. These were two gang-involved shootings. The victims were gangbangers. The assailants were gangbangers in both incidents.
The aim is to scale up these violence prevention programs where they currently spend, I guess, on the order of $200 million. That's according to them. So let's just take their numbers at face value for the purpose of discussion, although I'm sure they're inaccurate. $200 million that serve the city's most violent neighborhoods. You know what the problem is there? We need to be spending $400 million.
What do we get for our $400 million?
What did we get for the $200? And they know this how. What are the metrics? The aim to scale up those programs in those neighborhoods to reach at least half of the estimated 20,000 people in Chicago considered at greatest risk of being shot. Can somebody publish that list? I think if I was at the greatest risk of being shot, I'd like to know.
Yeah, please.
Mom, who's on the list?
Why don't we circulate, get that list published and circulate it. Everybody can play along. I mean, is that gallows humor? Yes, it is. But how else do you respond to something so silly that is presented as seminal from the political leadership of a major city and state? I don't know how else to respond anymore. $200 million, $400 million. It's like the conversation about the Chicago public schools. How much more do we need to spend per pupil? More. How much more do we need to spend on violence prevention and violence interruption? More. To what end? No. More. To what end? What do you mean, to what end, Dan? We have this goal. We have a goal of reducing homicides by 50% in 5 years. I mean, are you against that? Oh, of course I'm not against that. Well, then you better pony up. Because we have these grand goals. Have you produced results with the $200 million you're spending that are demonstrable, even anecdotal? Even just compile all the anecdotes and let's see how much per positive anecdote we're paying. I mean, this, the money is not a big deal to me. If $400 million would reduce the murder rate by 50%, fine. Another $200 million, no problem. Start with all those C-suite types in Chicago and pass the hat. Good. I'm on board. Why do we all know it's not going to happen that way? And so, but so we pretend, so I mean, but this is the beautiful lies aspect of the culture in Chicago and Illinois. It's, well, we know it's not going
to
work, but this is a way we can, this is a way we can all get together at the South Shore Cultural Center and congratulate ourselves for how much we care. I mean, we don't care if it works. We don't care about the outcomes. We just care about everybody taking notice of how much we care.
Well, what about using that money to hire resource officers and put them back in the schools? I mean,
they don't want to do that.
High School, they had 4 kids shot, and then the parents who wanted to take it away were begging to have them back. Because it makes kids feel safer, because kids don't feel safe right now, Dan. They don't. Going to school, going from school, they may feel safe inside the school, but they want the resource officers.
What else is new? There's been 100 kids shot and killed in Chicago, on the Chicago streets in the last 5 years. What else is new?
Well, now they see it while they're walking out of school, because both of those shootings happened while they were walking out of school in broad daylight.
Uh-huh. Yep. Yeah. I mean, let's go back to Ben Wilson. Pick the high profile kid gunned down on the streets of your choice. They've been profiled at State of the Union speeches, Hadiya Pendleton, when Obama was president. And what? We're going to do more. We're going to spend more violence interrupters, more gang prevention, more this, more that. And here we are, decade after decade, having the same conversation and pretending we're doing something novel. I'll go along with it. Oh, it's wonderful. Everybody at the South Shore Cultural Center yesterday, give them a big round of applause because they care so much. Bully for you. Wonderful. You're a good person. You're a city leader. You're a visionary. What do you mean to say? Whatever compliments we're supposed to offer. Okay, sign me up. Sure. I'll go along. Like everybody else. Henry in St. Charles, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Yeah, we defunded law enforcement, and we gave police rules that they can't do this and they can't do that, and as their work. So why is there so much violence?
Thanks for the call, Henry. Well, you don't understand. You've got the wrong philosophy. That is not the prevailing philosophy. That's not the received wisdom from your betters in public office. Here's the received wisdom. Brian Schwab is the AG for D.C. You know, the District of Columbia was an outlier last year where violent crime went up. But even in D.C., murders were up year over year, where they were down slightly in almost all metropolitan areas off 30-year highs. But in D.C., they continued going up. In D.C., this week, of course, was the news that a former Trump administration official was carjacked. And the last I heard, he was in critical condition in a parking lot in D.C. coming from his job. And this, of course, is endemic like it is in Chicago. So to Henry's antiquated understanding of how you deal with violent crime, here's the D.C. Attorney General, Brian Schwab, talking about it.
We as a city and a community need to be much more focused on prevention and surrounding young people and their families with resources if we want to be safer in the long run. We cannot prosecute and arrest our way out of it.
Yep. Don't worry about arresting and prosecuting. No, can't do that. You got to spend money. Social service providers, wraparound services at the schools. Can't arrest and prosecute your way out of it, but you can't spend your way out of it. That's what we know, or that's what we're told. It's everywhere. Same philosophy. How about this? You ready for more?
Yeah.
Baltimore, New York City, Philadelphia, Seattle, Austin. Some members of their various city councils had a little confab yesterday, a little call to talk about carjackings. They're on the same page as Brian Schwab in D.C. They're on the same page as BLM Brandon and Jelly Belly in Illinois. Take a listen to these guys. I mean, it's, you know, you're going to hear from councilmen from Seattle and Baltimore. The names don't matter because they're interchangeable parts. It's like playing Mr. Potato Head with city council members and mayors and governors. You could rearrange the faces and it's still the same potato head.
It traumatizes our communities.
It happens every day. Kias and Hyundais stolen and used to fuel crime.
The failure of Kia and Hyundai to install industry standard theft prevention technology in their vehicles has left our cities to clean up the mess.
We heard today from folks in Baltimore, in New York, in Austin.
Today, Seattle City Council member Tammy Morales taking aim at car makers, demanding they recall and repair models that are easy to steal.
The resolution and the lawsuit are really about corporate responsibility.
The most familiar part of Kia theft is this: stolen cars used as battering rams to bust into businesses. No doubt you've seen it plenty of times, but somehow this was news to Councilmember Morales.
Well, that's a good question. I haven't heard that these stolen cars are being used for smash and grab.
Morales acknowledged Kia thieves often get away unafraid to run from police.
It is young people who can very easily access these cars and who are stealing them.
Do you think there should be stiffer penalties when people do steal these cars?
Well, I think there are penalties for car theft, and those should be, folks who steal them should be held accountable.
In any event, Morales wants the companies to pay the city for the cost of dealing with the stolen Kias and Hyundais. As for the incentive for youth to steal the cars,
in court, do you think the lack of deterrent from getting caught or not being chased, do you think that plays into the decision by some of these young folks to steal these cars?
Well, I won't speak to the motivations of young people, except to say that they are young people. And when issued a challenge, especially on something like social media, they like to take it up.
Issued a challenge on something like social media, like take it up, like this is fun. Like we're challenging you to run a 5-minute mile.
Or eat a Tide Pod. Oh, my God. This is so great. Look at me.
So, again, the carjackings, as you've heard here, it's the car manufacturer's responsibility. And that's the main problem here. It's not the carjackers. And, of course, if Kia and Hyundai made their cars unbreakable.
Unhijackable.
Yeah, something like that.
I just made it up.
If there is such a way to do that, then carjackings would just end. Because it's only the existence of Kia and Hyundai that we have carjackings. That's the only reason. They wouldn't carjack another car. They're not going to carjack a Camry. All these people being carjacked and murdered or injured, guns pointed to their head. The make and model really matter. But this is, so that's leaders from across metropolitan areas. How about Gavin Newsom, Governor Patrick Bateman in California? This is a fun little story. He's tells this story of interacting with an employee, a cashier at Target. And the cashier didn't know that she was talking to the governor.
Oh, how dare she?
Some guy walks out and drops something. My 14-year-old says, "Sir, you dropped this." And he comes back, he picks it up, and keeps walking out. As we're checking out, the woman says, "Oh, he's just walking out. He didn't pay for that." I said, "Well, why aren't you stopping him?" She goes, "Oh, the governor." I swear to God, true story. On my mom's grave. The governor lowered the threshold. There's no accountability. I said, "That's just not true." And she said, "We have the 10th toughest, $950, the 10th toughest in America." She didn't even know what I was talking about. And I said, it's just not true. They're still stopped. They said, well, we don't stop them because of the governor. And then she goes, she looks at me twice, and then she freaks out. She calls everyone over, wants to take photos. I'm like, no, I'm not taking a photo. We're having a conversation. Where's your manager? Hopefully all the reporters weren't on for that.
Where's your manager?
The greatest words ever. Better than don't you know who I am is where's your manager? I mean, I'm surprised, Dan, that he didn't get out his cell phone and start videotaping this. I mean, the arrogance of him, and he's so detached from the own policies that he put in place. He's a disgrace. I mean, a leader divorced from the consequences of his policies.
And the other part of this, too, which is why these urban centers are so depressing, is that when she recognizes the clerk, if you're to believe Patrick Bateman's telling of the story, which is hard to believe anything he says, she recognizes he's the governor, and she immediately wants a selfie, and she calls people around and say, oh, look, the governor's here. I mean, the governor that you were just decrying because he lets people rob you blind and you're to turn a, you're not to do anything, and Target is probably telling you the same thing that the governor is telling you because of the governor's policies and the political class in California. And now you want a selfie from him because you're so addled by celebrity. So, I mean, so you have people who have sort of an understanding of what's happening, but then they're, I don't know, they're dumbstruck, literally dumbstruck by celebrity. And so you continue to get the same sorts of professional prevaricators as Patrick Bateman.
Well, and what he could do is reverse Proposition 47, which emboldens those criminals so they can steal up to but not over $950.
What he could do.
But that's too deep for him.
But I mean
the ego on that guy, I mean, honestly, I've always felt like I want to reach into the TV screen and bop him. But that yesterday, that's just... And you're right. I don't even know if he's making up that story. Who knows if it's even true.
So the
like Corn Pop was there at the Target with him.
D.C., Chicago, New York, Austin, Baltimore, Seattle. Starting to register? Not for that Target cashier, it wasn't. Jay in New Lenox, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer. Oh, hold on a second. Sorry, I messed that up.
Taking my call.
Yeah, go ahead, Jay.
Yep. You know, I think it's funny. Chicagoland people need to wake up. This is extorting more money from you. $400 million for... At $200 million, we shot 7 kids. So in 5 years, we're down to 3.5 now?
Yep.
I mean, it's just ridiculous. We're just going to throw money at a problem instead of actually coming up with a plan, which we know are the gangs. The gangs are the problem. The gangs are the ones that are carjacking. The gangs are the ones that are shooting. The gangs are the ones that are robbing. And we have social media now. There's so many ways to track these people down, and we're just not doing it.
And if there's a call, Jay.
And the sad thing is they walked out of there thinking that they accomplished something. Ugh, so slimy.
I still, the 20,000 people that are likely to get shot. I mean, again, can you, let's publish that.
Yeah.
Maybe we hire 20,000 bodyguards to go around with them. Corey Bush can help us with the security details. George in Naperville.
Yeah, Dan, I think these steps they are taking are going to give us a lot more honor students who make it to Harvard or Yale.
Thanks for the call. Or who are remembered as an honor student who was turning his life around, more likely. Glenn in Oak Brook.
Yeah, good morning. It's the responsibility of the property owners to reinforce their buildings so the stolen cars can't ram through there?
Absolutely. Exactly. Yeah. Thanks for the call. Right. Responsibility of car manufacturers, responsibility of general contractors and retail operators. Yes, you have to, turn your property into Fort Knox. And if you don't, that's on you. I mean, that's essentially what Lori Lightfoot said. What are you doing? Why aren't you hiring security people? Why aren't you taking advantage of the subsidy you get to put in camera systems from the city, the subsidy you get from the city to put in camera systems at the time. Yeah, I mean, it's always on the law-abiding, the person who play by the rules. The excuses are made for people that are predators, that don't play by the rules. that do not want to live peacefully in a pluralistic society. And the people who do are the problem. This is the message you get from your movement Marxists in charge of all those cities I just ticked off. John in Florence, Wisconsin.
You guys are getting this all wrong. Mayor BJ has a plan. Now, if you're going to pay $200 towards Mayor BJ or $400 million to Mayor BJ, it's just a matter of negotiation. And Chicago, it's still, being from Chicago, you have to realize there's a difference between giving to Mayor BJ or getting from Mayor BJ. Now, $400 million, you know, that's all I got to say. This happy ground rat day today, folks.
Thanks for the call, John.
Oh, that's right.
Punxsutawney Phil, is that today?
Yeah, that's today. Oh. Well, we're deep in it. Neither you and I blocked that.
Sean and Darian.
Oh. Yeah, good morning, guys. Yeah, I mean, they talk about these kids like they're straight-A honor roll students. They're nothing but punks. They're gangbangers. They're not raised properly. There's no parents in the home. It goes back to that, and it goes back to the respect for law enforcement. Go back to the old police ways. Put the fear of God in them. Put them behind bars, and it's over. It's all cleaned up. Thanks.
Thanks for the call, Sean. Not going to happen. Dan and Amy, Chicago's Morning Answer.
You're listening to Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer.
Then put your
top of the morning, Dan and Amy. So there's a movement afoot to recall Wisconsin State Assembly Speaker Robin Voss. Yeah, I met him a couple of times. This is, goes back a few years, though. But I remember he was a pretty strong proponent of school choice during the Scott Walker years. And obviously, Governor Walker was leading the expansion of school choice. So it seemed like they had a pretty good team back there during the Walker years. But apparently there is some dissension in the ranks. I know generally about this, but I don't pretend to have the intricate knowledge of the Wisconsin political landscape that others do. So there's this group that's trying to recall him because I guess he was not supportive of efforts to impeach Wisconsin Election Commission Administrator Megan Wolf, who they claim oversaw election fraud in 2020 in Wisconsin. And also he said to the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel somewhat recently that he was going to do everything to prevent Trump from being the Republican Party's presidential nominee in 2024. Anyway, so there is this event this Sunday, 1:30 to 4:30 in Sturtevant, Wisconsin at the Fountain Banquet Hall. And we'll get more details on this recall movement that is afoot with Mr. Conrad Reynolds, who joins us now to discuss it. Conrad Reynolds, thanks for being with us. Appreciate it.
Hey, well, thank you so much for having me on, Dan. I am very, very appreciative for the opportunity to speak to your listeners. We need everybody to understand that, first of all, happy Groundhog Day.
And, oh, yeah, I know. I just remembered.
That's right. And it seems to me that, you know, we have a Groundhog Day every day with a lot of the rhinos that we have across the nation. We continually, over and over and over, see the same thing. We have borders that can't be protected. We have budgets that get blown out. We're at, you know, almost $34 trillion in debt. We have a problem here across the nation. We have people that we need to get rid of in certain positions. And one of those is Mr. Voss. It's time for him to go, and I'll tell you why. You mentioned it right there in your show. He is protecting Megan Wolf, and we all know that Megan Wolf is the one that allowed the Zuckerbucks to come in, all the drop boxes. She did all of these things. In fact, her term is over. It's been over since last summer, but they allow her to stay in the position, and the blocker is Robin Voss. He has the opportunity to pass Bill 18, which would allow the Senate to go move forward with impeachment proceedings against her, and that would happen. But he's blocking that. Why? I don't understand why he is so opposed to the people getting their way in Wisconsin. And apparently he is. And so the other thing that people need to understand is He's got an 84% disapproval rating across the state, an 84%. I think it's time for Robin Voss to go, and I think it's time for him to move on. And we know that this next election in 2024 is very important, very, very important for our country. And we need to make sure that every election has integrity and every vote counts. I don't care if you're a Democrat, Republican, Independent. We want your vote to count, but we want it to be a legal vote, and everybody should be on board with that. And if you're not, then...
But didn't Voss, after the 2020 election, if I'm recalling correctly, retain a former Supreme Court justice to investigate the claims of election fraud? So, I mean, he did do something to pursue those claims. Did he not?
I see a lot of those little efforts, but, you know, he eventually fired him, you know, but you know, as you well know. And the other thing is that all the stuff that was brought up, I don't know if you had an opportunity to see the videos of the ballot harvesting in the rest homes in those areas.
Yeah.
Did you see that?
And 2,000 mules, yes.
Yeah.
That was despicable. Well, you know, again, as far as I'm concerned, and the people that are trying to get rid of Mr. Voss, they basically are on the right side as far as I'm concerned of election integrity. And election integrity means, again, we want all votes to count. We don't want systems put in place that make it to where people's vote doesn't count. And we think that that's what's happening right now. Well, there's no question that's happening. And Mr. Voss needs to go. And, again, the people of Wisconsin are going to have an opportunity to vote. And that's why we want the recall effort. And that's why we're pushing for it. We're gonna have the signatures. And they're going to get an opportunity to say yes or no to Robin Voss. And I think that's going to be important. And Mike Lindell is coming on Sunday. Thank you for mentioning that, because
he's
a great guy. Mike Lindell is a great guy, and he's coming on Sunday. We want everybody to come. That hall holds 500-600 people. We're trying to get as many people there to listen to what's going on and sign the petition. And we think that it's going to be a huge success. And again, we know that it's time for Mr. Voss to go. And
right.
We have a website. We ask people to go to it. And so it's Recall Voss with one S, by the way. RecallVoss.com. RecallVoss.com.
So this Recall Robin Voss Day, how did you get Mike Lindell involved, or did he get you involved?
Mike Lindell's a friend of mine. I've known Mike Lindell for a long time. And he has been at the forefront of trying to get election integrity across America. He's a good man who really wants to do the right thing, and he understands what's at stake here for our country. If anybody doesn't know what's at stake, just look at the southern border. You know, I don't know if you know what my background is. I'm a retired Army colonel. I was 30 years as an Army intelligence officer, a strategic intelligence all across the world. I spent over 5 years in Afghanistan. And I understand what the implications are without a secure border. We've got people coming across, and we need to fix that, and no one is. So national security across the board, across America, is important. And Mike Lindell understands that. And that's why I'm here.
And he makes a heck of a pillow, too, I understand. Yeah.
I love my pillow, so.
Well, he also makes slippers, and he also makes towels and
dog beds, and yeah, no, I know everything.
I'm wearing the slippers right now. You don't have to tell me, Colonel.
Exactly.
I got you.
Yeah.
And they're really good. I mean, I'm not just saying he really is, but just a good man. I mean, you know, they try to destroy him, but it's not about Mike Lindell, other than he's coming and people have an opportunity to meet him. It really is about, you know, election integrity, election security here. There's a lot of people. I've met so many good people here who want to get rid of Mr. Voss. And you know what? He's been here for a long, long time. And one thing I've learned, that nobody's indispensable. I think Charles de Gaulle said, you know, the cemetery is full of indispensable people.
Right.
I mean, you know, the fact is, you know, no one's indispensable. And you stay in places too long, you get too much power, you stay there, and it becomes a problem. Even in the military, you know, some of our best commanders, I mean, they're only there for 3 years and then move on. There are good, talented people that can step in, and that's what we really need in America. We need to get rid of a lot of these rhinos, and we need to get people in that will actually do the right thing.
Let me ask you about this a little bit more about this recall, because I just want to understand like the point of it, because I understand that election commissioner is she can't. There's a court order that prevents her from being removed. I understand that, and I also understand that even if you replace Voss, sort of like replacing McCarthy, the Wisconsin House doesn't have the assembly doesn't have the votes to override Tony Evers's vetoes. So what I'm and that's just a foundation to say this isn't necessarily about policy change. This isn't necessarily about actually getting rid of this election commissioner if there's a court order that prevents it. This is about punishing Robin Voss because he hasn't lived up to his responsibilities as speaker in your mind. Is that right?
Partly right. This is okay. About getting rid of Megan Wolf. This is about getting rid of Megan Wolf, and Robin Voss has fought the Patriots, the people who are trying to get rid of her out of that position because they believe that she has facilitated policies and procedures that are not only unlawful, but that these are policies that undermine the vote of the Wisconsin voter.
But Robin Voss can't get rid of her.
He's been a blocker.
So what you're saying, he should be with you guys leading the charge to get rid of her and challenge this court order.
Yeah, he needs to get off his rear end, and he needs to pass this assembly resolution number 18, which basically all he had to do is bring it to the floor and let them vote on it. He blocked that. He's blocked that continually. He will not allow just a resolution to come to the floor to vote to let the Senate move forward with impeachment, and he's blocked it. Why? Why is he doing that? That's all he's got to do.
And why do you think he is?
He doesn't do that. Well, I don't really know, but I know this. He's got the power to block it, and he's done it. And we've got people in power who are not letting the people of their state, of their county, have their say, then that's a problem. Because you know what? The people are – The government works for the people, and they're not doing that in this point. They are blocking, and so that's why he's got to go. You know, they've got great patriots across this country. Here locally, you've got people like Dick and Liz Uline, who are very big patriots trying to do the right thing. These people are fighting for us, okay? And you got people like Robin Voss, who's not allowing, the people to have their say. And I think that everybody in America needs to understand, not just here, every other state, when you've got people like Mr. Voss, who uses his power to block their right to have a hearing, to have a say, then that's when it's time that they've got too much power and it's time for them to go.
I hear you. So there's a battleground poll out. Actually, Mike Scott just reported on it that Wisconsin for Biden-Trump is 47-47, so it's a dead heat. We know Wisconsin is one of those top four swing states, along with Carolina, Arizona, and
Michigan.
Georgia, as I was saying, and Wisconsin. So what will you guys be doing on the ground to try to deliver Wisconsin for the Republicans this go around? You think it's possible?
It is absolutely critical for the 2024 race for the Republicans and for President Trump. But that's not what this is about right now. I'm just telling you. It's important, but that's not what it's about. What's about is what I just said. It's about Mr. Voss not listening to the people of his state who won't her gone, who won't Megan Wolf gone. And he's not willing to listen to them or do that. And yes, we believe that if she's gone, we think that it'd be a fair election. And all we want is a fair shot. We want a level playing field so that President Trump, when he runs, or anybody else who runs, will have an opportunity to win. I said earlier, and I say it again to all the listeners here, this is not a partisan thing. This is not Republican or Democrat. This is about America. This is about people having their voice heard. And when you get people in office who are unwilling to listen, to use their position to block, like he's blocking this this bill, number 18, that would just simply allow the Senate to move forward. That's all we're asking. And he is not allowing that. So everybody ought to be concerned when someone has that kind of power. It's not right. And I've been to over 70 different countries. And I will tell you, when people get that kind of power, it is very dangerous for democracy and for our republic. And that is why I'm trying here to fight and trying to get people to understand This is the time to stand up. This is the time to come and make your voice known. Please come on Sunday to this event, because I think it's going to be exciting, and I think everybody will understand. You know, it's the Fountain Banquet Hall in Sturtevant. Come to it. And listen to what Mike Lindell has to say. I will be there along with many other Patriots, and we're going to make this happen, and we need everybody to be involved.
He is Conrad Reynolds. The event he was describing Sunday, this Sunday, 1:30 to 4 p.m. at the Fountain Banquet Hall in Sturtevant, Wisconsin. MyPillow's Mike Lindell will be there as well, as he mentioned. Conrad Reynolds, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
Dan, thank you. Amy, thank you. Happy Groundhog Day, and God bless America.
Thank you, and he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
It's news, opinion, insight. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. As always, The Simpsons was years and years ahead of the satirical politics that dominates our day, though it's not satire, it's reality. I enjoy this exchange, thinking about that, between RealClearPolitics.com's Phil Wegman and Corinne Jean-Pierre, White House spokeshuman, when it was announced that Biden will at some point in the not-too-distant future be visiting East Palestine, Palestine, Ohio. This exchange between Wegman and her.
And then next month, when the president is in East Palestine, will he drink the water there?
I mean, look, what I can tell you is the president's focus has been to do everything that he can to support this community from day one. We get what's going on the ground. We understand what's going on. That's why we've had the EPA. That's why we had DOT. That's why we had HHS. That's why we've had FEMA on the ground. You know, this is not about some sort of, like, political stunt here. This is not about, this is not what this is about. This is about this president being a president for everyone and showing up for this community. That's what this is about.
Johnny on the spot a year later. But, I mean, it's just so reminds me of when Mr. Burns ran for governor. And he had the photo op, you know, canned dinner at the Simpson household. And, of course, this is when Marge sprung fish for dinner from the river outside the nuclear plant that he owns.
I remember this one.
Smells delightful.
Uh-oh.
All right, three-eyed fish. Can I have your plate, Mr. Burns?
Yeah, and that tubed his gubernatorial campaign in The Simpsons. So, I mean, just borrowing from Phil Wegman, I hope somebody, when the big guy, Mr. 10%, shows up, offers him a glass of freshly squeezed water from the faucets of East Palestine.
Oh, you know he's not going in anyone's house to even be tempted to drink that water. They would not let him touch that. And why even bother going? I mean, it's just so such a photo op.
Because he cares.
Yeah.
That's why. Of course.
Does anybody live there anymore? I mean, I know there's still some business owners there, but most people have moved out.
Palestine. It's like Frankenstein. John Hinderakers, president of the Center for the American Experiment, contributor Powerline at powerlineblog.com. He joins us now. John, thanks as always for being with us. Were you moved by Corinne Jean-Pierre's description of the impetus for president to finally get over to East Palestine, Ohio?
So, Dan, when Joe Biden is done in East Palestine, he can come out to Golden Valley, Minnesota, and survey the wreckage of my office, which was firebombed over the weekend, presumably by leftists.
Yeah, I was reading about that. You were Were you in D.C. when this happened? Because I know you were attending the Mann Mark Stein trial about
the
hockey stick.
Yeah, I was in D.C. for part of this week. This actually happened Saturday night, about 2 o'clock in the morning. That'd be, you know, Sunday morning. So the building was deserted. It's a good-sized building, but not very high, only about 3 stories, a few miles west of downtown Minneapolis. About 2 o'clock in the morning, somebody broke into our building, and they started 2 separate fires. On the ground floor, they started a fire in the corridor outside my office. Now, Center of the American Experiment is the main conservative organization in Minnesota. We have 22 people working in that office, so it's mm-hmm. pretty good sized. Mm-hmm. And then we sublease space to a group called Take Charge, which reaches out primarily to young black people, encourages them to be self-sufficient, you know, don't be victims, be victors, and so on. So we sublease that space to them. So in the corridor between our office and the Take Charge office, these arsonists started one fire. And then on the third floor, they started a completely different fire at the office of the Upper Midwest Law Center, which is a conservative public interest law firm, which I'm on the board of. They either started that fire right outside the UMLC office, or they may have broken the door down and fired and started the fire inside that office. It is completely destroyed.
Well, you're so lucky because I know a lot of people work late night. I mean, that nobody was in the building at the time.
Yeah, apparently nobody was in the building, but fortunately somebody saw the fire, called the fire department. They got there very fast. They got the fire extinguished. But it's going to be months before any part of that building reopens, and I don't know whether we will ever be able to reoccupy our offices. We may be. I'm trying to sort that out with the building, the insurance companies, and so forth. But in the meantime, the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms is investigating the fire per se, you know, causes of the fire, and the FBI is looking for the perpetrators. There's no question that it was arson. That's a given.
That's what they've concluded. They've already concluded that.
Oh yeah, no, it's an arson investigation. And frankly, it's obvious when you start one fire on the ground floor, different fire on the third floor. You know, that's not going to be a coincidence. Right. And that building is full of small businesses. There are psychologists and chiropractors and financial advisors and so forth. And you know, they didn't target any of those people. They targeted the 3 conservative organizations. It's the 3 leading conservative organizations in Minnesota. So I am working closely with the FBI to try to identify potential suspects.
Well, do you have a list of potential suspects?
Yeah.
Oh.
Should I say that again?
I said, I hope you're not Catholic. So the FBI, do you think they're going to devote the same level of intensity and resources that they devoted to finding the pro-abortion types that firebomb the offices of pro-life centers and pro-family and pro-family groups and so forth?
Well, I hope it's not the same, Dan. I mean, so far, it seems like we've had a good cooperative relationship with them. We have a camera inside our office. And we have a door, but it's pointed toward the door. There's a glass panel, just a thin glass panel next to the door. And I understand that our camera, even though these people didn't actually enter our office, they're trying to get 2-for-1, you know, by starting the fire in the corridor. But I believe that our camera actually caught some of the action, some of the arson action through that glass panel. And the only way you can really get to our building, there's a highway and then there's a frontage road, you know, next to the highway. And you can't really get to our building except on that frontage road. There are cameras on that road. And the number of cars on that road at 2 o'clock in the morning, you know, on a Saturday night is not large, not large. And so, you know, it may well be that license plate numbers can be identified. And so I have no idea whether these arsonists will be caught or not, but it's a possibility.
Well, just in time for election season. And if people want to see the damage that's done, go to powerlineblog.com and you could see it there. So are you afraid for your own personal safety? Do you have any security with you?
Amy, I don't have any security. I get death threats periodically, but who doesn't? You know, everybody who's active publicly in the conservative movement, you know, periodically will get a death threat. And I've sent a couple of those out of the FBI. But I don't think it's one of those people. I think it's more likely. There are a lot of possibilities. It could be eco-terrorism. You know, we're very active in the energy space. We've done energy work in 16 states as well as D.C. Opposing wind and solar projects. Eco-terrorism is a possibility. You know, we're very pro-law enforcement. After the George Floyd riots, we put up 35 billboards around the Twin Cities saying support our police and did a petition campaign and so on. Seven times those billboards got defaced by people who left behind the Antifa symbol. So, you know, Antifa types are a possibility. We've opposed public sector unions. You know, that's a possibility. We've announced that our annual dinner speaker this year is going to be Naftali Bennett, the former prime minister of Israel. And so pro-Hamas people conceivably, you know, could have done this. We've been very harshly critical of the current Tim Walz administration in Minnesota. So maybe just a couple of rabid Democrats. I don't know, but there are a lot of possibilities. No, I don't worry about my own security. But we will be talking to our landlord about possible security upgrades going forward.
You've got maybe Ilhan Omar can make an introduction for you to Cori Bush, and she can tell you all about cobbling together security details.
Well, I'm not sure I've got quite the budget that some of those folks do.
There you go. I'm obviously it's terrible that occurred. I'm sorry to hear that. I assume, you know, thanks to the digital age, your people will be able to work remotely and you'll be able to keep the work at American Experiment going.
Yeah, we're a highly collaborative organization. We can work remotely for a while, but at the end of the day, you know, we need to have an office. We need to be together. So I'm going to be looking. Our building is part of a three-building complex. I know there are some vacancies within that complex. I just haven't had a chance to do this yet, but I'll be talking to our landlord about maybe finding, probably not all in one place, but maybe in a couple of locations in the same complex, some temporary office space.
Since you invoked George Floyd, we were talking about crime in metropolitan areas still, as you guys talk about, write about as well. And just we had a big announcement yesterday in Chicago, the mayor and the governor. We're going to, instead of spending $200 million a year on violence prevention, it's going to be $400 million to try and reduce homicides by 50% over 5 years. And you're hearing the same thing in D.C., in Seattle, in Austin, Baltimore. You know, it's not, we can't arrest our way out of it. We can't prosecute our way out of it. We have to spend our way out of it, essentially. And I wonder what sort of status update you can give us about Minneapolis.
Well, we're in a terrible situation here. You know, after the George Floyd trial where the chief of police testified against Derek Chauvin, it's kind of hard for the city of Minneapolis to hire police officers, you know. And just recently, within the last days, we've had another incident where the Hennepin County attorney, Hennepin County is Minneapolis plus, you know, Hennepin County attorney ran on a platform of not prosecuting criminals, and she's been true to her word. She has now charged a state highway patrolman with second-degree murder in an incident arising out of a very dangerous encounter with a convicted felon illegally in possession of a handgun. And so, you know, here we go again with the authorities prosecuting the police instead of the criminals. This time, though, it may be different. He's getting a lot of public support. He's hired a very good, very aggressive lawyer. And maybe it'll be a turning point. But in the meantime, it's just very difficult for the police departments in this area to hire officers.
I don't know if we've talked to you since we talked to Liz Cullen, who is the investigative journalist who did that Fall of Minneapolis documentary. But I wonder what your reaction to that documentary was and what kind of impact it's having on understanding of the George Floyd incident in Minneapolis.
Yeah, well, it certainly has been widely viewed. I think there are aspects of it that are debatable, specifically in connection with the George Floyd incident. I think that the way it traces the horror of the George Floyd riots and the impact they've had on the city of Minneapolis, which has been devastating, I think is right on the mark. And it's something that we who live here have seen with our own eyes. But, you know, the fact that they burned down, the police were told to evacuate the 3rd Precinct Station and abandoned it to the rioters, and the rioters burned it down. It hasn't been rebuilt to this day. That was a horrible, horrible moment in the history of law enforcement in the United States, and it's one from which this area has not recovered.
John Hendrick.
Do you see it recovering anytime soon, though, or do you think it's just gone forever?
I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of people who, you know, they still live in this metropolitan area, but they don't go into Minneapolis. You know, that's fairly common.
Yeah, fairly common in Chicago, too. John Hinderaker, president of the Center of the American Experiment, contributor to Powerline, powerlineblog.com. John, good luck with that situation. Keep us updated about, you know, the status on that investigation, as well as getting new digs for the Center for the American Experiment, too.
Will do. Thanks a lot, Dan. Bye-bye.
Yeah, I'm glad you're safe, and he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. Only the biggest stories, only the biggest guests, and only the biggest opinions. This is AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Our friend Dan Henninger, that is, over at the Wall Street Journal. And the Wall Street Journal editorial board has been making the case for this deal that we were told we don't know the details to. It's all internet rumors by Senator Jim Lankford from Oklahoma. But then he goes on Fox News Sunday with Shannon Bream and essentially confirms the details by responding to her questions about the details that have been circulating. So I'm a little leery of the posture that Lankford and McConnell are taking on this. And by extension, the Wall Street Journal editorial board, Ann Henninger, who I like a lot, but he writes, if the Republicans have been screaming bloody murder about migrant crossings and are on the brink of impeaching Mayorkas for not doing his duty, how can they justify allowing the Mayorkas policy continue unabated all this year? This is sort of the argument of take something instead of nothing, even if your accusation is right, that all it does is slow the flow in. But to that, I would say, Well, no, because it's going to be hailed as a solution to the lawlessness at the border. The attention will dissipate. The attention on this issue and on what's happening will dissipate. And so will the political urgency of doing something that is substantively in advance of border security as opposed to, you know, performatively in advance. So I just can't go along with Lankford and the Journal editorial board and our friend Dan Henninger, but this is part of the discussion on the right side of the spectrum. Just to go back to what Lankford said in that interview, and particularly the one aspect of it that is the most talked about and repudiated, this idea of, you know, 5,000 migrant rolling averages and then the border closes. So it's the feeling, the assertion that, okay, we're going to, instead of tens of thousands on a daily basis and on some days, it's okay if you're under 5,000 on a daily basis. And then, but if the five-day rolling average gets over that, then all of a sudden we get serious about stopping people from entering this country illegally. Doesn't seem to make much sense. Doesn't seem like that's border security. Here's how Lankford explained it.
It would be absolutely absurd for me to agree to 5,000 people a day. This bill focuses on getting us to zero illegal crossings a day. There's no amnesty. It increases the number of Border Patrol agents, increases asylum officers, it increases detention beds so we can quickly detain and then deport individuals. It ends catch and release. It focuses on additional deportation flights out. It changes our asylum process so that people get a fast asylum screening at a higher standard and then get returned back to their home country. This is not about letting 5,000 people in a day. This is the most misunderstood section of this proposal. Let me tell you briefly what it is. In the last 4 months, we've had 7 days. In 4 months, we've had 7 days that we had less than 5,000 people. This is set up for if you have a rush of people coming at the border closes down, no one gets in. This is not someone standing at the border with a little clicker saying, I'm going to let one more in. We're at 4,999, and then it has to stop. It is a shutdown of the border, and everyone actually gets turned around.
Okay.
That's the focus that we have right now is how do we actually intervene in this administration and turn people around, not let people in.
to help us understand where things stand on the Senate side, we're pleased to be joined by Wisconsin Senator Ron Johnson. Senator Johnson, thanks for being with us. Appreciate it.
Morning. Happy to be here.
So how do you respond to what Jim Lankford said?
Well, it's actually very difficult to respond because I have not seen a word of text. And quite honestly, he has not explained it even in that great of detail as he did on Shannon Bream inside the conference, even though I called a conference meeting to discuss this. So what concerns me about this, in that conference meeting, Senator asked Senator Lankford, well, what's your goal to these negotiations? And, you know, I thought the answer would have been, well, to secure the border. You know, basically what he was saying there. He said, well, we know this president's not serious. It's going to take time. So my goal is to make sure that the next president has the tools to secure the border. Now, that may be a worthy goal in divided government when you can't get Democrats to agree to anything because they want an open border. They cause this problem. But that's not what the expectation is. And here's my primary concern is by setting these thresholds. You know, you've got 5,000 where it's mandatory. They shut the border down. They don't really explain how they're going to do that. Mm. But then at 4,000, it's mandatory. Is this going to actually make it more difficult for a future president? Is this going to hinder a future president that wants to secure the border, that he will not have the discretion that he right now? He every president has the authority under Section 212F of the Immigration Nationalization Act. The Supreme Court said it exudes deference to the administration. So the speakers argued this. People like Mark Morgan and Tom Homan have argued this. The president already has the authority to shut the border down. Is this bill going to make it give the president less authority? Is this going to hinder a future president saying, no, you can't shut the border down. You can't use that authority that you already have unless it hits 4,000 a day. These are serious questions. I've been raising these now ever since some of these details started leaking out. I've gotten no answers whatsoever. And when I ask legitimate questions, I expect to get answers to them, and I'm not getting them.
What about the proposal to increase green cards by 50,000 a year? Any answers to that?
I've heard that. We haven't seen the text. You know, they are saying it's going to cost a lot of money. Okay. Because you're going to have to hire agents to handle 4,000 or 5,000 a day once you normalize that. I mean, are we going to spend more money on sanctuary cities to make it easier on migrants, I mean, more pleasant for migrants who all have cell phones? You're going to call down to Central America and say, yeah, cross the border, 8 hours, I was on a plane, I'm up here, they put me in a hotel room, give me good meals. You know, that's just going to incentivize, it's going to exacerbate the problem. Again, if it's in there, that is insane. What we need to do is we need a surge right now. Shut the border down now. Was basically what the President Trump did over 12 months. He went from peak to trough.
Well, I mean, that's...
Without any help from Congress, without any new change in the laws whatsoever.
Yeah, that's exactly the point that's so confusing, and I don't understand the Lankford position, and I don't think he's articulated even on TV about giving the next president the tools. Well, first of all, if you don't believe this president is a good faith actor, then what is the purpose of this negotiation? Number one. Number two is, right, I mean, Mike Johnson just gave a half hour speech on the House floor yesterday with, you know, detailing the 64 executive actions President Biden took to weaken the border and some of the key ones like end of Title 42 and end of Remain in Mexico. And ending the construction of the border wall. These are obvious ones. So if you did it by executive order, you can reverse what you did by executive order too. So it's not a question of executive authority. It's a question of executive political will. And Lankford seems to be conceding that the executive doesn't have the political will. So what are we talking about?
Well, you're exactly right. I mean, McConnell got snookered into this. Okay, McConnell's the mastermind here because McConnell wants funding for Ukraine. He realizes in his conference that there's a division and they may not be able to pass support for Ukraine. They'd rather secure Ukraine's borders than our own. And so as a sweetener, they came up with, well, okay, we're going to demand border security, but he wasn't serious about it. And so the first thing he took off the table is what we were talking about in our conference, had a great deal of support, is, okay, well, if we give them funding for Ukraine, well, let's make that contingent on actually securing the border. Let's set benchmarks, you know, performance measurements, student business all the time, right? We were pushing that. Had a great deal of support in the conference. Without telling the conference at all, we've learned that McConnell basically told Blankford that's off the table. And we heard from Kristen Sinema, yeah, James never asked for that. So we took the exact leverage we might have had with the administration wanting funding for Ukraine and took that leverage away.
Well, wait, so
my stamp has been a joke from the beginning. It is, you know, they just got completely snookered, let's put it that way. And now it's been turned around, it's been twisted where it's our fault that the border's not secure. I mean, this is beyond absurd.
Well, so McConnell, I mean, first of all, the EU just gave Ukraine $54 billion, so maybe that obviates some of our responsibility. But regardless of that, so McConnell is pushing a phony border security measure in order to give real U.S. tax dollars to Ukraine. Why would that be his priority over border security, particularly with the exigency of the issue in this election cycle? I thought he wants to be Senate Majority Leader.
I have no idea. Well, I think he's always thought that he could spend his way in the majority. You know, when he became leader of the Republican Senate Conference back in 2007, our debt stood below $10 trillion. Now it's approaching $35 trillion. And in all that time period, there's been one constant factor. There's been one person in every debt ceiling negotiation, every spending negotiation. That's Mitch McConnell. So he doesn't apparently care about mortgaging our children's future. He certainly hasn't dug his heels in ever. And here's just another example of it. Another $110 billion. He's not asking you to pay for it. You know, at a minimum, a Republican leader who wants to spend more money on Ukraine ought to be saying, okay, Mr. President, if you want to spend another $110 billion, 800 and some billion in our own defense isn't enough, let's take away some of your green energy boondoggle spending. And at least pay for it, right? I mean, that's what a principled Republican leader would do. But instead, Mitch McConnell enters into, you know, false, phony negotiations on the border and comes up with this Rube Goldberg plan, is what it seems. It's not going to secure the border, but just might have enough support to pass the Senate, but doesn't have a chance in the House. What's the point? Set us up to be blamed. Great job, huh?
Yeah. Well, Senator Johnson, the question I have for you is, why is Biden doing this? Why is he letting thousands of people in every day for the last 3 years?
The only explanation I have is every one of those individuals coming across the border is very, very appreciative to Joe Biden and the Democrats. And they will become dependent on our system, and they will be reliable voters because the Democrats want to make cheating on our elections easy, which is what mail-in balloting is all about. That's what, pushing absentee ballots while you relax all the controls on them is about. So it's the only explanation I have, because it's obviously a clear and present danger to this nation. You've got all the warning signs flashing, according to FBI Director Wray. The threat from foreign terrorist organizations is as high as it's been since 9/11. Gee, I wonder how foreign fighters would get into this nation. Are sleeper cells already here? Is that why he's so weak on Iran? Again, this makes no sense, and the vast majority of the American people want a secure border. So, again, I don't know why McConnell would play into Biden and Schumer's hands, but that's exactly what he's done.
Yeah, I'm inclined to agree with you, and even more so after I read a memo that was put together by Cleta Mitchell, who I'm sure you know, well-regarded election attorney. And she really gives the details on the opportunities under the way that the Supreme Court has interpreted the National Voter Registration Act, the infrastructure at the state level. She really details the opportunities for all these, you know, say 1.8 million gotaways to wind up on padding the voter rolls. And as you say, likely more for Democrats than otherwise. Has there been any discussion about that, some of what Cleta Mitchell proposes as reforms to statutory law, starting with the National Voter Registration Act, as well as the law that governs overseas voting for ex-military and expats not in this country?
Well, there's a real reluctance about bringing up election law in Congress, because elections should be handled at a state level. And you start opening up on a national level, you see what Democrats are doing in terms of open border. You see what they want to do. So it's, you know, I actually agree with those. On a national level, let's keep the hands off here. We need to concentrate on taking control over state governments and then establishing strong controls over our elections on a state-by-state basis.
Yeah, I mean, I with the balance of power, I understand. But, I mean, even just raising this issue to put the states on notice, I mean, I'm just citing from her memo here. For example, she asks, the Biden administration has ordered every federal agency to register everyone who comes in contact with the agency. So what protections exist to stop the voter registration of migrants by DHS?
Yeah, what we should be doing is using the power of the person. We do have a, you know, majority in the House, and not allow these agencies to spend any money in that manner. That's mm-hmm. something we can do. We should be doing that. But unfortunately, Democrats have a majority in the Senate, and those types of measures probably won't pass either. But we should be raising the issue. There's no doubt about it. I certainly have talked about the irregularities. I'm the only guy that held a hearing as chairman of the committee about the examining the irregularities of the 2020 election. Of course, I got slaughtered for it.
Yes.
But it's indisputable that there are all kinds of irregularities in the 2020 election. Election fraud does occur. It's just a question of to what extent.
What do you think is, let me put it another way, do you think the administration of the election in Wisconsin this year is going to be better than it was in 2020?
It certainly was in 2022 because we got a lot more paid poll workers, over 5,000. We've signed up over 5,000 for this election. So now we have paid poll workers plus poll observers. So we're keeping our eye on the process, and it did help in 2022. For example, Milwaukee got its election results in by, I think, 11 o'clock at night. So I knew I'd won, even though Mandela Barnes hadn't conceded. But, you know, we did improve the process. Not with help from Tony Evers at all. You know,
right.
The Wisconsin legislature passed laws. He vetoed them. But just having eyes on the process, I think, made a pretty big difference.
He is Wisconsin Republican Senator Ron Johnson. Senator Johnson, great to have you as always. Thank you.
Take care.
Thank you. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
Listen to Dan and Amy on your smartphone. Download the AM560 mobile app today at 560theanswer.com/mobile. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. We'll talk January jobs numbers with Jim Perry momentarily, but here's a number that's interesting. The papers with which I'm affiliated doing these stories, looking at the cost of like real everyday products like, you know, groceries for Illinoisans. Mm-hmm. The cost of Jewel Osco chicken breast has increased 251% since 2020.
Yeah. You know I complain all the time. And it's called the Jewels, by the way. Okay.
A pack of chicken breast at the supermarket chain cost $6.99 per pound as of January 2nd of this year, which is $5 more than the $1.99 per pound price tag for chicken breast on December 16th of 2022.
Mm-hmm.
So in the last 2 years, 251%, total increase, a 251% increase in the cost of chicken breast, which outpaces the supposed 2.7% inflation rate for food in the last year, as reported by the Labor Department, which is why it's hard to believe anything the Labor Department reports, including the unemployment number, because, I mean, you know, it's a government agency. They're not susceptible to incompetence or cooking the books.
Yeah. Right. But, I mean, in whole, on average, 20% more we're paying for everything, like toiletries, shampoo, everything at the store that you buy is not what it used to be, and it's never going back down.
Well, over, just to continue this, just in mm-hmm. terms of the real dollar amounts, turkey breast, December of 2020 was 12 cents an ounce. Now it's 50 cents an ounce. Ground beef was $3.99 a pound. Now it's $5.49 a pound. Mm-hmm. Laundry detergent, $7.99 for an 88-ounce bottle in December of 2020. Now it's $12.99 for the same bottle, $7.99 to $12.99. Ham, 99 cents a pound, $4.29 a pound. Salmon, $5.99 a pound, $6.99 a pound. And on down the line, the good news for me, not that what? I purchased these things, king crab legs have stayed constant at $24.99 a pound.
Oh, thank God.
So it's not impacting me, and that's what's most important. But no,
well,
it's
dog food's
really
up,
interesting.
Though, and so is cat food. I mean, everything.
Except
every
king crab
item.
Legs. Except king crab yeah. legs. That's the okay. good news. So you got that going for you. $24.99 a pound king crab legs, thanks to your president, Joe Biden, stayed constant $24.99 a pound. All right?
That's why I don't eat crab legs. $24.99 a pound? Nah, I'll go to McDonald's.
Jim Perry is the founder and CIO of Perry International Capital Partners. He joins us now. Jim, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Dan. Good morning.
Morning. Yeah, let me know if you want me to pick you up a couple of pounds of king crab legs next time I'm in Chicago. That's where you get some real savings. 353,000 jobs, says that same Department of Labor we were discussing, created in new jobs created in January. Beat the street estimates, that's for sure. Can you give us any color on those jobs? How many public sector versus private sector, for example?
I don't have that breakdown yet. It's still a little early for me. I don't know exactly what that number is on public, but I would say this. Manufacturing was 23,000 versus 8, and it seems like the administration and most of the financial system will come out and say this is a great number and everything's great, except that there's a big problem, and it dovetails into exactly what you're talking about with everything except the lasting king crab legs. Prices are up. Inflation is going up. And it's driven by wages, right? So if you look at the jobs report this morning, the one thing that sticks out in my mind more than anything else is that hourly earnings are rising at a year-on-year rate at 4.5%. That's the highest in 12 months, right? Maybe 18 months. Labor costs are going up across the board. The economy is a service sector economy, so it's mostly really just getting out those goods and services that people want. And the fact is, to your point on the Labor Department, the Bureau of Labor Statistics admits that prices, according to their measurement, are up 25%. From the pre-pandemic level, 25%, right? That's everything. So we've got a growing economy, which is inflating. That's the bottom line.
And that's why Powell this week was reluctant to encourage those who think a rate cut is coming in March.
I think that's right. I think Powell, well, it's interesting. You'll appreciate this, and I think your listeners will. Chairman Powell will be on 60 Minutes, right, on Sunday night. And I think what he is going to talk about is that he wants to unwind the excessive monetary policy that's in the system, which is, you know, a tough sled politically when you're sitting in Washington where everybody else that's in town wants debt to continue to go up and interest rates to continue to go down.
Well, what does that look like? I mean, is that going to happen?
I do not think so. I mean, I look at a lot of data in this business, and one of the things that I picked up yesterday afternoon, last night, the Atlanta Fed, right, there's 12 regional Fed banks. The Atlanta Fed came out last night and said that GDP in the first quarter of this year is expected to rise by 4.2%, right? 4.2%. Furthermore, the prices using the PCE, the personal consumption expenditures number, which is the Fed's preferred measure of inflation, is expected to rise, get this, 4.9% in Q1 this year. These are huge numbers, and it's all about excessive liquidity in the system, thanks to the government.
So that means obviously there's no fiscal restraints on that side of the house in the federal
Zero.
Government, and then you're going to have you've got to have Jay Powell play his part to continue to to inflate the Fed's balance sheet, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I have said to clients all month, the last quarter or two, 3 months, that I really don't think that the Fed is going to cut rates in 2024. I think anybody that's in commercial real estate will cringe and think I'm a fool, and bankers will think that, and the fund management business will think that, and the bankers will think that. But these guys are talking their book, and all they want is more and more free money. And the stock market sees that. So that free money is coming. The Peterson Institute, which is a nonprofit sort of government watchdog, they came out with a report about 3 weeks ago and said that fiscal spending, this is government money that is printed that goes directly into the economy, bypassing the financial system, since the pandemic was $5.4 trillion in the last 4 years. That has never happened before, even in the World War II, and it's never happened before. This is an unbelievable amount of spending, and it's causing inflation because it's making wages in the service sector rise.
Right. You prop up, but you've got to prop up consumer spending to prop up the stock market, and that's certainly going to be the order of the day in D.C. at least through November. So it looks like it's going to be another banner year for the stock market, people scratching their heads. But what, go long on the Magnificent Seven and don't fight City Hall, right?
Well, yes. Short answer, that's the way to play it. I mean, the Magnificent Seven, the returns in the stock market for the Magnificent Seven last year were 75%, right? 75%.
Wow. Right.
I mean, which is amazing, right? I mean, that's really an enormous number.
Yeah, and then what do we have coming, the news this week, you know, after Zuckerberg gets excoriated, for the performative excoriation of Mark Zuckerberg before the Senate Judiciary Committee, and he apologized to some parents, then the story today, record profits for Meta. I mean, you know, it's just going to keep churning.
Yeah, it's not only record profits. I mean, you know, their revenue what did they say? The fourth quarter profits tripled from third quarter. Tripled. They grew 25% on revenues to $30 billion, which is the highest they've done since the pandemic. And net income went from less than $5 billion to over $14 billion in 1 year, right?
It's astounding.
But it's an amazing number.
So why should anybody – but, I mean, I would finish your answer. I didn't mean to interrupt, but – but in terms of like Magnificent Seven and ride the funny money fiscal Fed policy at least through the end of this year, is there any caution you have for believing that to be the best play?
Well, I think that, you know, if you look at the S&P 500, the other sort of 493 stocks, really, you know, their earnings in this quarter will probably be flat at best, right? So, and you have to remember that the S&P 500 is really weighted toward the industrial sector of the economy, you know, industrial and goods and things like that. But this economy is a service sector economy, and, you know, professional business services and stuff like that, these job growth numbers are just enormous. And the fact is that the S&P really isn't a reflection of what has become a transformative U.S. economy over the last 5 to 6 years, especially pandemic. The pandemic accelerated the trend that was already in place, you know? And I think that a lot of the people that comment on the market and inflation, they kind of cherry-pick the data that fits their narrative, right? I mean, you know, they talk about goods inflation coming down so hard from 9% to, you know, maybe 1.5% or something like that. Goods inflation in 6 months or 12 months is probably going to be negative. I mean, China is exporting deflation, right? The economy is collapsing over there. They're trying to sell as much stuff as they can at any price they can get for it. So CPI is probably going to keep going down. But that's not really the true picture of what's going on in the economy. The inflation is coming in wages. Wage inflation, according, again, to the Atlanta Fed, wages are growing. And this is just the Fed, you know, at 5.6%. And people who change jobs, wages are growing at over 7%. I mean, this is not recessionary stuff, you know?
Jim Perry is the founder and CIO of Perry International Capital Partners, LLC. Jim, thank you as always for the analysis.
Dan, thank you. Have a good weekend.
Thank you. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
It's what Chicago is talking about. It's Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan and Amy on AM 560, The Answer.
Open mic! Open mic Friday! Call it now! Open mic Friday!
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Yes, it's that time of the week. Taking your calls, 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line with comments, concerns, compliments, criticisms, general crack pottery. We'll take it all on Open Mic Friday, sponsored by turnkey.pro, which is the proper entree to our friend David Kolsak, the founder of Turnkey IT.
Good morning.
David.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. How are you
morning.
Guys?
Good morning.
Happy insignificant rodent day, easy for me to say.
Did he see a shadow or not? I didn't hear.
He did not. Apparently, we're going to have an early spring.
Oh, wonderful.
Yippee.
So I saw this meme the other day that said, people believe a groundhog can predict the weather, but those same people don't believe in science. I mean, what a joke. The woke left want everyone that doesn't think like them to label them as a fascist, a racist, or something worse, you know. So I've got some real words for my liberal friends out there. Trump never removed his opponent from a ballot. You did. Trump never used the government against his opponent. You did. Trump never censored speech. You did. Trump never stole an election. You did. The fact is that you're guilty of everything you accused him of doing. And people are getting sick and tired of being sick and tired. Everything that the left says is a projection. They project what they want onto their opponents, and what they do, you know, they project what they're doing onto their opponents. And we're waking up to that fact. We're wiser for it. You know, watch for that projection. It's everywhere. And once you see it, you can't unsee it. So I was struck by the Russell Brand interview with Tucker Carlson. Did you see that one?
I saw part of it, yeah.
You know, that guy's incredibly well-spoken. He uses words that I don't think I know what they mean. He's articulate. He's, you know, passionate, and his greatest attribute is authenticity. So here's a guy that grew up in a fairly normal middle-class suburb in the UK. He rose to stardom, and he even married Katy Perry. He was in movies and TV shows and was very recognized throughout the world. You know, Brand admitted to having all kinds of addictions and his personal battles to overcome those demons. But on the other side of that dark period, Russell Brand seemed to have forced himself awake. He's no longer a card-carrying Hollywood liberal celebrity, but rather a resolved and authentic self who's calling it out as he sees it. And he's a fighter. He stands up for what he believes. So in exchange for his take on the Ukraine situation, which did not fit that narrative, he was targeted with some sexual abuse accusations, and he was taken off of YouTube and canceled. You know, however, he kept fighting every day, and he used his influence over his millions of followers to spread what he believed is truth. So he's been outspoken, but through it all, he's remained his authentic self. That's my point. So do you know what the most powerful frequency to leave the human body is? It's the frequency of authenticity. Authenticity is 4,000 times more powerful than love. I just made that up, actually. But do you know when authenticity
okay, Puxatani, David. Yeah. what was the question? What was the question?
What's the most powerful frequency to leave the human body?
No, I got that part that you made up.
Right. But yeah, but do you know when authenticity happens? It happens when your words are truthful and you believe what you're saying. So it's really an uncommon trait in today's society is everyone wants to fit in rather than rock the boat. If a person lacks authenticity, they will never achieve a high level of success. And the people that seek success and don't seek significance never find authenticity. So this is the most powerful frequency to harness and leave the human body. And it's so powerful that it actually can change the frequency of the person you're talking to. When your words are truthful and you believe what you're saying, it's really powerful. So when I look back in 2015, when Trump came down that escalator, I think he was authentic and that resonated with people. Not all of them, Dan, right?
Right.
But a lot of us. So something that dovetails into that authenticity is trust. And the general public doesn't trust the media anymore. And that's why Trump only grows stronger as they attack him. So you've got this guy who says what he means and believes what he says, and the media claiming that it's exactly the opposite of authentic. So it makes me wonder what he might have on them, as the vitriol just seems to get amplified. So you see, authenticity is a problem today, and we see it in most celebrities. Look at this carnival that's Travis Kelce and Taylor Swift. Whatever your take on that situation is, and I really don't care, it's great marketing at very least, or maybe a giant psyop, or perhaps just they're in love, right? But what's missing is
psyop. We're going to talk about that. I want to talk about that. So just as a quick aside, we'll open up. I mean, for Open Mic Friday, this Taylor Swift psyop business is really a bridge too far. But anyway, so we'll talk about it. I'm glad you broke the seal on it. Go ahead.
Well, yeah, but, you know, it's either great marketing or maybe they're just in love, right? Or maybe it is a psyop, so who knows?
Exactly. Can't you just believe in young love, David? Yes.
No, I can't. It's just too perfect.
It's Hollywood script.
It's not authentic, right?
Yeah, well,
celebrities are always acting, right? On screen and off screen, yes. They're always the same. They think about all those people, they've been reading this script. And, you know, the script is stand 6 feet apart, wear a mask, take a vaccine. And those two are at the center of it. Look at the TV commercials on the football games. All of them are still going strong in the face of this COVID lie. So none of that helps. 6 feet apart, so arbitrary and capricious, but yet they got away with it. Anyway, the idea of authenticity is 4,000 times more powerful than love is real, and people crave it. That's why so many people love to watch and attend Trump rallies. Some say Trump is just acting and conning the public, but I'll contend that you can't fake authenticity. You either have it or you don't. Sometimes, and I know this from just being me, authenticity can be off-putting because, and what was that Jack Nicholson line? You can't handle the truth. So to wrap this up, we need authentic people. The world is full of people who will say one thing and then do the other. They're inauthentic or counterfeit or phony or fake. Fake celebrities, fake politicians, fake news, fake history. The world is craving authenticity, and it's almost like they're dying of thirst. And when you're thirsty, you'll drink the sand if you thought it would quench your thirst. So in this case, people are drawn to authentic people, which they see in Donald Trump, Tucker Carlson, Russell Brand, maybe James O'Keefe, and there's many people. Many people are treated like rock stars at Joe's on Weed, right? So people seek them out. They hang on every word, and they can't wait until their next podcast. So that's what authenticity does, and I, for one, can't wait for more. Have a great weekend, guys.
Thank you, David Kolsak, turnkey.pro, turnkey.it, turnkey.pro. All right, 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. Did you want to take calls? Do you want to offer something up? Do you want to comment on the Taylor Swift, Travis Kelce psyop theory?
Well, Biden needs young voters right now, and what a great conduit to get to them than by Taylor Swift, don't you think? I mean, why wouldn't they want her endorsement?
Yeah,
but that's not the issue. They're saying that Republicans, I don't know, what is the beef with everything? What's your problem with it?
Well first, I mean, okay, so... yeah, of course they want celebrity endorsements, like every Democrat wants and gets celebrity endorsements. And Taylor Swift is the biggest star in the world, and so of course they want her endorsement. And if Travis Kelce wants to go on the road and get everybody vaxxed while she sings a song and endorses Biden, then of course they would love that. Of course, all that's true. All this stuff, like there's a survey that one in five Swifties will vote for whoever Taylor Swift says they should vote for president. So what? that is already baked in. The idea that there are people that would vote for who their favorite celebrity says you should vote for. I mean, yeah, but the coattails are not nearly as long as people think. And it's redundant. They're inclined to be on that side. The celebutants are inclined to be on that side of the ledger to begin with. Of course, they're already voting for Biden. So, I mean, there's not a huge delta that Taylor Swift brings to the table that's demonstrable in terms of all of a sudden she's going to get Teamsters to stay, you know, in the Democrat Party and vote. Taylor, I was going to cross over, you know, vote for Trump. But, you know, Taylor Swift and that Travis Kelce, they're just so damn cute. I can't.
America's royalty. I mean,
I can't
cross
her.
Them. I never wanted the Chiefs to lose, but I'm so sick of that relationship that I wanted it to end.
But here's what I mean, you know, again, Taylor Swift is a Pentagon PSYOP asset. Jesse Waters essentially said that by sort of asking a question but insinuating it.
Uh-huh.
Jack Posobiec at Human Events, gearing up for an operation to use Taylor Swift in the election. Taylor Swift is an op, and Vivek Ramaswamy is sort of saying that it's already scripted that the Chiefs are going to win the Super Bowl because, you know, it's part of this overall PSYOP. I mean,
oh, come on,
get a grip.
That it was rigged, that the game was rigged, the AFC, NFC championships were rigged to have these two teams play against each other.
And to Kolsek's point about authenticity, you know, that's all well and good, and you can ask questions. But that is not, I mean, there are authentic conspiracy theorists, I suppose. But Vivek Ramaswamy is too smart to believe that. That is not being authentic. That is playing a part. That is being a provocateur for the purposes of stoking paranoia because you think it will aid and abet, you know, your candidate. But that's not being authentic. Because all of this stuff about Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce all week is just absolute silliness. Absolute silliness. Get a grip here. Distinguish between things that we have evidence for that suggests a proper level of skepticism that demand answers from people in positions of authority, like what we were just talking about with Ron Johnson about the border. But to sort of dream up these things about Pentagon psyops involving a pop singer and I know you got me on this, but you know, like, right. this is not the first, you know, like, celebrity and politics. I'm going to go full Frank from Arlington Heights here. I hope I'm not stealing his in-depth history from next week. Nathaniel Hawthorne, you know, the great author.
Yes.
His most famous work is what? The Scarlet Letter. And when he published The Scarlet Letter shortly before Franklin Pierce ran for president in 1852, and his Bowdoin College classmates encouraged him to write sort of the definitive biography on Franklin Pierce and, you know, cast him in a heroic light, because Nathaniel Hawthorne was this popular figure because of his books and because of The Scarlet Letter in particular. And he writes this, he agrees to do this biography for the purposes of Franklin Pierce's election in 1852. And it was material in helping Franklin Pierce get over the hump and win the election in 1852. So, I mean, it's just one example. Like we think all these things are new and it has to involve some sort of global 21st century complicated. No. It's like in Alec Baldwin says, you know, if George H.W. Bush wins, I'm going to leave the country. Or Barbara Streisand says the same thing. It's just like it's all media generating to move public opinion by people that have a following because of their status as an entertainer or something or an athlete. So it's not new and it's not that complicated and it's generally not that material. I will suggest to you that Nathaniel Hawthorne's book on Franklin Pierce in 1852 had more of an impact on that election than Taylor Swift will have on 2024.
Okay.
All right.
We shall see. Oh, real quick, I just want to get this in there because the Chicago Tribune, Dan, the employees, they walked out. They had their 24-hour walkout, their first strike in 176 years. And I had a friend go to it because I know you know, I just wanted to make
hilarious.
Sure that it was covered. Oh, it was hilarious because, Dan, they're not used to being the news. They're used to covering it.
It takes a lot for folks in journalism and media to step across and become part of the news story. We try and stay in back
hilarious.
Of that. So it's really been pushed to our limit.
Oh, my God. It's bad enough I had to go to the site yesterday because Greg Pratt told me not to go to the site because of their 24-hour strike where the propagandists of the world were uniting and so on and so forth. Now I got to listen to them, pretend to be journalists, pretend to be selfless, pretend to be standing up for the workers' rights and all this other stuff. Here is the password, Alden Capital. I mean, you were dumb enough to buy the Tribune. That's on you. Here's the password, Patco. Patco, that place.
Okay, I just have one more soundbite because this guy, Kurt, I think he's, you know, welcome to the world, baby girl.
My rent just went up again today.
Oh.
It's up 20% since 2019, and that's just rent. My pay is up 0%.
I mean, right. So these are the people who are distilling information for you. Somebody that is that
ignorant.
Clueless. Yes.
Yep.
I mean, it's just great. No, I loved it. I love the whole 24-hour strike. Don't go to the website. Don't read the paper. This shit, we're not taking this anymore. Okay, princess. All right. Let me know how that goes.
The strike's over, though. No, it's 24 hours have passed. I'm glad we survived.
By the way, we'll give a special recognition to anyone who can tell me who Franklin Pierce defeated in the 1852 election for president of the United States. And the parties of the two candidates. That's some real in-depth history. I hope Frank from Arlington Heights is listening and is impressed to know that I could sub for him in case he wants to take a Teachers Institute day.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll send him an email.
Yeah. All right, take some calls. Rick in Downers Grove, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hey, good morning. Hey, you know, earlier in the show you mentioned that, like, in Wisconsin, Biden and Trump are tied like 47% apiece. And I got to tell you, who are these people? And
who are which people?
There isn't a clear demarcation between Trump's economy in the world and Biden's economy in the world. So I can believe it's got to be one of two things. These people are like completely brainwashed by CNN, MSNBC, and are never going to snap out of it. Or they're complete morons, i.e. Taylor Swift fans, and they will happily do whatever a celebrity tells them to do.
God,
no questions asked and no thinking involved.
You know,
have a good weekend.
Thanks for the call, Rick. You can be an idiot and a Taylor Swift fan, but that doesn't mean that Taylor Swift is responsible for you voting for Tony Evers and Mandela Barnes and Joe Biden and so forth. I mean, you know, let's work our Kamala Harris Venn diagram on this a little bit. How about
on the pie charts? Yeah. Dan Pierce beat Winfield Scott. Everybody knows that.
Franklin Pierce is his name.
Okay.
Yeah. But
no, I just said Franklin Pierce beat Winfield Scott.
Did you Google that?
No, I had a text message to me. Well, there's this thing called the Google, and yeah.
Yeah, I know. Did your texter friend Google it?
I'm sure that they knew.
Okay, well, tell your texter friend to call in, because then I'll query them on the 1852 race to see if it's authentic, and they didn't just Google it. Did they give the parties?
They did not give the parties.
Yeah, all right.
So will you tell us the parties? Text. Winfield Scott sounds like a Democrat.
No.
Republican?
Well.
It wasn't the Green Party back then, was it?
This is why you need Frank from Arlington Heights, because who is the godfather of the Republican Party?
Don't bring up godfather.
The land of?
Lincoln.
Yeah, and what year was he elected?
Oh, God.
What century was the Civil War?
17th president.
Yeah, right. So Franklin Pierce preceded, he was the Democrat, and Winfield Scott was the Whig Party, which preceded the Republican Party, you see. Yeah, a little bit of a trick question there. And what was Winfield Scott's rank?
Oh, God.
See if your friend who's Googling and texting you knows that. All right. Melanie in Buffalo Grove.
Hi there, Dan and Amy. Good morning. Happy Groundhog Day. Didn't Franklin Pierce not get the Democrat nomination? Was he like removed from the ballot or something?
He was elected president in 1852.
At some point, though, he did not get the Democrat support. Wasn't he once a Democrat? Or maybe I need to go back to Google.
Okay.
But what I'm calling about
now.
Yeah. Right. And we have a primary coming up on March 19th, and I am a precinct committeeman, and I'm responding to, there was a couple weeks ago an open mic Friday, and I've heard people call in, like, should I be a precinct committeeman? And I heard the story, like, I think you mentioned that in the old days, you would have these township organizations, and everybody would come to a meeting once a month, and they'd all like applaud each other and recognize each other, and then they'd go home. And I can appreciate that. I've been an appointed PC for Vernon Township Republicans for about 2 years, so now I will be on the ballot, and I want to be elected. And we do have people. I know Steve Bannon's precinct strategy has been mentioned a couple times. We have people who come from, you know, they've been motivated by that. We have all kinds of people. We just need more. And the party is going to be defined by who is helping in the party. I was a Democrat probably most of my life, and I voted for Obama twice. And then I voted for Trump twice because that's kind of where I was red-pilled a little bit since the COVID days and stuff. And I feel that people who say they're politically homeless aren't actually politically homeless. They're just not participating. And the Dems have gone off the deep end. And if we want to change anything, especially here in Illinois, we have to organize and fight in the way that is going to be effective. And it's not going to be monthly meetings with ex candidates or whatever, kind of like slapping each other on the back and then going back to sleep for another 2 years or whenever the next election cycle is. So, for example, Vernon Township is the largest in Lake County. We have our northern border is like Route 60, Town Line Road, down south to Lake Cook, east some of Long Grove, west parts of a little bit of Lake Forest, Mettawa, Riverwoods, Lincolnshire. We have 43 precincts, and that's about like double what the average is. Most of these townships have 10 to 15. And we need to fill them with precinct committeemen. And for me, the work that I've been doing the past 2 years, I see a different role for the precinct committeemen. We should embrace technology. We should embrace like the future. It's not just knocking on doors, leaving our packets. We need to work the data, the voter data. We need to reach out. We have 8,000 Republicans who are unreliable in our township, and we need to find out why they're not voting in every election, what their issues are, maybe what's keeping them away from the polls. So I think it's a good idea to be a PC. I think it's the first step to get in there to change things. When you're elected, you get to then vote in our convention. And over here, we have the central committee members. So if you're not a fan of what the central committee is doing, we have in Vernon Township, 5th District, which is Aaron Del Mar, 9th District, which is Joan Lassonde, 10th District, which is Mark Shaw. Once you're elected as PC, you carry your vote to your convention and you elect those people who then, you know, run things over at the state central committee. So for everyone who has a problem with that kind of thing, this is how you get your foot in the door and you actually start making change. I think
I agree with what you're saying, but then you need to actually make some change, even small change, like, for example,
absolutely,
taking a snake like Mark Shaw off the state central committee and getting better leadership for the state party, getting better leadership locally to make sure that it's consistent with that. And that just isn't being done in very many places. So, I mean, I agree that this is a good path that you're describing. And I agree that the precinct committeeman who's active and engaged and does the hard work of connecting with people and connecting other people to each other. That's a powerful political force. It just is mostly inert within the Republican ranks in this region.
Right, it is. And I know that there's a ton of people out there that would be so effective if they joined the ranks of PCs. And the more we have here, the more work we can do to make change. For example, Mark Shaw was like Lake County chair at one point as well. And then, you know, he was voted out. It's like incremental steps, but consistency is key. And I just think if you're a voter and all you do is vote, especially here in Illinois, you're doing the bare minimum, you know, like you need to do more, because voting is like at best like maintenance of whatever this is. And at worst, it's you're just contributing to the dysfunction of the Republican Party. You know, like you have to do more than just vote. Even beyond, you know, PC, the need for election judges, and not just election judges, but actual Republican election judges that can be vetted. And you're like, yeah, you're a Republican. There's so much need in the political process. You have to participate in the process. So anyway, I just wanted to call because I'm a PC for Vernon Township Republicans. If you are in our township, our website is vernongop.win. We have really built up a good site, I think, and a good communications outreach to bring people into our group. And you won't be alone. And we have training. And we, you know, this is the grassroots, you know, boots on the ground effort that's going on here. And I think that we should change how we do things, and we are changing how we do things, but it definitely takes more people.
Thanks for the call, Melanie. Appreciate it. Tom, Blue Island.
Hey, good morning, Dan and Amy. Dan, I just wanted to piggyback on something you've been talking about all week, and what I believe his name is David started the show, the Open Line Friday out with, and referenced authenticity. So Jim Langford had two comments that I thought really were explanatory. First, he made a Hillary Clinton smarmy-ass comment in reference to no one standing there with a clicker, kind of reminded me of her that someone wipe her server with a cloth. And to his point, if there's no one there with a clicker, then how is there any kind of number of how many people are coming in? And the answer is he doesn't care how many people are coming in. It's going to be just an effort to make some kind of a deal that makes Joe Biden look like he got some kind of something accomplished on the border. And who would trust Joe Biden on the border anyway after the last couple of years? And just one other quick point in reference to that. He said he made a comment if there was a rush to the border that they would shut the border down immediately. And that gets to what you've been saying all week, Dan. Then just shut the border down. If you have the ability to shut the border down, if there's some kind of rush, then you're making an argument you could do it if you wanted to. And that has to be the starting point.
Thanks for the call, Tom. I don't think we should keep a head of state waiting any longer. Kevin. AKA the Prime Minister of Ireland, who vacations in the winter in Ogden Dunes, Indiana, strangely enough. Kevin?
I have a huge breaking news announcement. Inauthentic hope and change. Huge announcement, bigger and more consequential than anything since maybe the end of World War II. Now, since he's running for president, I will leave it to the Governor, J.B. Lizzo, to formally announce this, but I'm going to whisper to your audience that the Windy City of Big Shoulders has been saved. And may I say, this is the kind of excellence that happens when your selfless elected officials, hardworking problem solvers like your Prime Minister of Ireland, spring into action. Very specifically, Dan Prof, I first approached the Israeli Knesset. They laughed at me. But then I got the city council of Tel Aviv to pass a resolution backing a ceasefire in Chicago. Thank you very much. You're welcome. And I will relinquish the remainder of my time to the speaker in my stereo.
Thank you for the call, Kevin. Yeah, it's very, very Babylon B-ish. Yes.
Yeah, because they came out with that Gaza has voted for a ceasefire in Chicago. That was their headline today, the Babylon Bee.
Tom Barrington.
Good morning, guys. I can't believe the Mick beat me to the joke. Damn it. Hey, I just wanted to give a shout-out to James O'Keefe. I don't know if you guys saw that video of the gay date, but that was absolutely hilarious.
Yeah, I was wondering if he was one of the guys in the Senate chamber who recorded something, if it was the same person.
Oh, that was classic, and the guy just spilling the beans, and he's like, you're in cybersecurity? Uh-huh. Okay. What the hell are you guys doing over there? Anyway, have a great weekend.
Thanks for the call, Tom. Kevin, Austin, Texas.
Dan, Amy, thanks for taking my call. I love it when I can listen to talk about authenticity. Then it goes to the Swifties, and then it goes to Franklin Pierce in one wonderful thread of consciousness.
Yes, it's a lot of range, yes.
Oh, my gosh. And then I got in. He even had me looking on Wikipedia as I was on hold talking to you guys. but somebody beat me a punch. Anyhow, I love the fact that was that Melanie who called in for the North Side?
Uh-huh.
And she broke through as far as the grassroots. And one thing I wanted to mention, you do have to change leadership as far as the hierarchy, but you can become a leader as a precinct committee chair. Anyhow, that's I was listening as you, so that thought came up. But I wanted to talk about a way for the violence protection is possibly give parents a scholarship so they can send their kids to schools that would actually instill character.
Oh yeah, we used to have those scholarships. That. Yeah, right.
I remember those.
Yeah. 5 minutes ago.
You can do $200 million for that. So.
That's a good point, Gavin. Yeah, right. The $200 million increment they're going to spend, this public-private partnership to prevent violence, right. $200 million is scholarships. Oh, wait, we eliminated the tax credit scholarship program. The ironies abound. Oh, I wanted to get this in, too, by the way. I mentioned this. We've talked about these stories before Valentine's Day. I know if we've got a little time. I think we do. What, a couple weeks or something?
Yeah.
When is it?
Oh, it's your big holiday.
Yeah.
Kidding.
The San Antonio Zoo made a name for itself because it gave, like, people, you could name a cockroach or a small mammal after your ex and feed it to a zoo animal.
Yeah.
Yeah, so this was like a way to, raise money and get attention for the zoo. It's pretty shrewd marketing. Well, there's another play here. This is pretty good. Pet Adoption Center in Blackwood, New Jersey, Homewood Bound Pet Adoption Center, Blackwood, New Jersey, is offering to let donors name a feral cat after their ex and then have it spayed or neutered.
Oh, and watch them cut off the naughty bits.
The satisfaction.
That's pretty nasty.
You could get,
do you get to watch? Bad. I mean, do you get to participate?
Give them a call. I don't know all the details, but I just like the creativity.
Well, I have feral cats, and I'm always looking for more feral cats. So can you imagine if I had a group show up like, this is Bob and Steve and Jim?
Well, it's a great way to, to have some sort of cathartic experience vis-a-vis your ex without, violating the law. Joe in Arlington Heights.
Hey, good morning. You mentioned Nathaniel Hawthorne.
And I did.
A lot of people know that he was also a poet. And since you mentioned him, I thought maybe I could share my favorite Nathaniel Hawthorne poem.
Oh.
Okay.
Of course.
It's called Go to the Grave. Go to the grave where friends are laid and learn how quickly mortals fade. Learn how the fairest flower must droop. Learn how the strongest form must stoop. Learn that we are but dust and clay, the short-lived creatures of a day. Yet do not sigh. There is a clime where they will dwell through endless time, who here on earth their maker serve and never from his precepts swerve. The grave to them is but a road that leads them to that blessed abode.
Well, Joe from Arlington Heights is our poet laureate. He is Chicago's Morning Easter Poet Laureate, so we give him the option to read a poem or to provide his own original work. Thanks for the call, as always, Joe. To that, I'll respond with this tender rap about Kamala Harris and J6.
September 11th, 2001, and January 6th, 2021.
Newsflash, nobody gives a about it. We all admit that was pretty dumb, but that's about it. When we saw the news, we were shocked and we were kind of tense. Like, damn. Then we forgot about it by the 10th. Nobody's walking around stressing over Jan 6. It happened and that was it. We haven't gave a damn since. It's all good when riots are kept in the hood, but now you're freaking out because this was in the neck of your woods. Now it's a big deal. Now it gets real. Now it's important to us. Not back then in 2020 when stores were boarded up. Not back then when goods were looted and folks were brutalized. Not then, but right now, because it happened to the suit and ties. Way above my head, we were all year with demonstrations that left dozens dead. But people like Nancy didn't flinch, in fact they loved it then. People will do what they do, bitch, ain't that what you said?
Yep.
There's literally compilation videos of you and all your colleagues inciting this kind of crap. So it's very fascinating to watch you swallow your words. You put your own foot in your mouth and now you're forced to dial it back. It's fine when you encourage it in my town, in his town, in her town, when the whole city's being burnt down. You smile as you give the green light for mobs to rob.
but as soon as it comes close to you, then it's a problem.
Got it.
Nice.
That's pretty good.
It's what Chicago is talking about. It's Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan and Amy on AM 560, The Answer.
Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.